even some snow over the higher ground. But for the north of Scotland here, it'll be frosty to start the day and a bright day with some sunshine as well. Temperatures around about 6 degrees Celsius. Jim, back to you.
Snow, fog, rain. Anything missing there was a plague of frogs, I think. Thank you, Helen.
Pleasure.
Now, The Valley by Richard Benson is this week's book of the week, in which we focus on the story of the author's grandmother, Winnie. Her apparent pregnancy, the catalyst for her marriage to Harry, turned out to be a false alarm. But a year later, in the spring of 1932, the imminent arrival of their first child prompted the couple to decide that if they took in a lodger, they could afford to start their new family in a house of their own. The reader is Richard Stacey.
It's a lovely day tomorrow. Tomorrow is a lovely day. Come and feast your tear-dimmed eyes on tomorrow's clear blue skies.
The heart of the home is the sitting room, dominated by the range and an upright piano. The range, with its rag rug in front, marked with black spots where spitting, slaty coal has sent out sparks, is open to anyone. Women stand in front of the fire with their backs to the flames and hitch up their skirts to warm themselves, an action they would consider outrageous if performed elsewhere. The fire itself is a conversation piece. Good fires are admired, though one that is allowed to get too big will be criticised by guests after they've visited. What's she want to be chucking coal on fire every verse end? I thought she was trying to cook us. In the valley, there is a detailed knowledge of the various coals from the different pits, and people discuss them in the way that winemakers discuss grapes, cursing the rubbishy slack of fragments mixed with dust that won't light, and exclaiming over the pure bituminous cobbles that give you a clean, burning light with no ashes. Winnie and Harry have been at number 34 for 2 months before Harry reveals to her the lodger who will help them pay the rent. It is his paternal grandmother, Juggler Jane, so called because she shares some of the eccentricities of the Hollingworth men. Said to be descended from gypsies, Juggler Jane is old and wears long black dresses in the Victorian style. She carries at her waistband a 15-decade rosary, carved from Whitby jet and threaded on silk, which she uses in old healing rituals. Jane treats the rosary with a religious reverence, though she's not a practicing Catholic. She says prayers with the beads, but she also uses them to talk to her ancestors. Jane helps with births and the laying out of the dead. She also brews potions from wild plants and herbs that she picks from the roadside and fields, her skirts often wet and muddied at the hem. She makes wine from nettles and dandelions and cooks hedgehogs in clay. The Hollingworth family story that Winnie recalls best is the one about Jane pushing a pram through the village and the local bobby stopping her to pass the time of day and remark that he didn't know she'd had another baby. She hadn't. She'd slit a sheep's throat in the fields, wrapped it in a baby's blanket, and was using the pram to get it home. Juggler Jane now cares for 4 young grandchildren abandoned by one of her sons who, after his wife died, left Bolton-upon-Dearne to seek his fortune. She moves between whatever accommodation she can find. The children, John, Joan, Tommy and Alf, are sometimes together, sometimes dispersed among relatives. When Winnie goes into labour, early in the evening of Sunday 24th of September, her mother, Annie, realises there is a problem that is beyond her abilities as a midwife. By the time the doctor arrives, Winnie is bucking and grimacing in agony. The doctor extricates from his leather bag a pair of steel obstetrical forceps, and Winnie reaches for her mum's hand. Slowly, the forceps tug and draw out and tug again. Winnie gasps and squeezes her eyes shut. She feels more tugging and the baby comes out. There is no crying. She looks up to see the doctor holding up a baby with a buckled head and a face mauve blue beneath its caul.
A boy,
says the doctor. But it's dead. The room is silent. The doctor tosses the body to the foot of the bed. He examines her, and her mum wipes her face. And then, as the doctor methodically tidies away his instruments, there is a small, half-choked, wrenched cry at bed end, then a movement. Annie is the first to respond, whipping up the baby and massaging his back. Another cry, a millisecond longer. The doctor snatches him back, and Winnie sees a limp, slow movement in the legs. There is urgent movement and more massaging, and then more crying. And finally, the baby is in her weary arms. The little boy, brought back from the dead. Harry is determined that his son should be named after him. Winnie is fiercely resistant to the idea. They are still disputing the baby's name on the day of the christening as they get ready to leave the house. Amid the clatter and gathering and the sound of Roy Fox and his orchestra on the radio, Winnie remains silent, thinking, thinking, thinking. In the chapel, before the service, the minister asks delicately if they have a name, and Winnie says, Roy. Roy, says the minister, and any second name? A second name, she hadn't thought of that. Fox, says Win. Roy Box, says the minister. Yes. Roy Fox Hollingworth. Very well. Harry sighs. He does quite like Roy Fox's band. Highgate, 1938. The financial arrangement between Harry and Winnie is that he tips up his whole wage packet for her, Roy, and the house, and keeps the earnings from his acts for himself. Women think themselves fortunate to have a husband who tips up, so she lets him spend his showbiz money how he likes. From the cash he gives her, she first takes the rent, keeping it in a tin on the sideboard until the landlord's man collects it on Thursdays. She then places a pound spending money in Harry's drawer in the sideboard. Every once in a while, Harry falls short in the week and borrows from the rent tin, and this makes Winnie curse him, because it means her having to borrow from her sister, Millie, or a neighbour, just as they will have borrowed from her. The women are sympathetic and sanguine about this mutual lending from sideboard tins and drawers, but Winnie hates having to ask. To save herself the humiliation, she learns how to balance her home accounts using the Monday morning method. On Sunday night, Harry comes home from the club drunk enough to have little idea of how much money he has left. In the morning, once he's gone to work, Winnie goes into the passage where the coats hang and picks from the pockets his remaining notes and coins, taking what she needs for the house with a little bit extra to keep in reserve. The secret is to guess how much he thinks he could have spent. Winnie is a good guesser, and in more than 50 years of marriage, Harry Hollingworth will never know or wonder how his wife coped with the unexpected fluctuations he caused in her budget. A Monday morning in April, a wash day, Winnie brings downstairs big armfuls of soiled laundry and begins sorting the whites from the rest. Her bloomers, handkerchiefs, Harry's underpants, Roy's other school shirt, all with their individual imprints, ruts and blooms of dirt. She's sorting and dropping them to the floor like the skins of dead days and nights when she notices a mark on the front of one of Harry's shirts. It is dark red lipstick. Smears rather than lip prints, near to where the collar would fit. She feels her heart quicken and her fingers tingle. She finds and works through the others. No. No. Hang about. Here. The same lipstick. Pursing her lips, she renews the washing with clenched vigour, bunches up a mound of whites in her arms and dumps them in the boiling cauldron with a cup of soap powder. The air fills with the fatty, raw chlorine odours of Rinsol and Dolly Blue Whitener and an underlying, faintly acrid smell of dirty laundry. Damn, Harry! People feel everyone should be allowed to have a bit of fun, but pinching husbands... It might be one woman's fun, but to a wife, it was the loss of her livelihood. As she's viciously pegging the sheet corners to her line, she wonders what to do. She enjoys putting Harry's shirts through the mangle. More sheets go out to dry, mangle smooth and blue-white. By the time she's finished and has begun to fold the early drying parts of the laundry for ironing, she's had an idea. The following Friday, her mam comes to stay for the night. At 8 o'clock, after Harry's gone to the club, Annie babysits while Winnie brushes out her bobbed hair, puts on her makeup and her overcoat, and slips out of the house. Unnoticed, she walks to the bus stop near the club, which is close enough to allow her to see the club doors, and then, in the cooling spring air, she waits. She's been watching the building for 2 hours when she sees Harry coming back from a circuit with Danny, Lank and her brother, Sonny. He's now left school and is working at Barnborough Colliery. Does he know? Surely not, she thinks. Surely your brother would tell you. She stands and waits again, an hour or more, until the time for last orders comes and loud, cheerful men begin to leave. Single men, big groups. There goes Sonny, that's Nancy's husband. There's Harold and Harry. Harry with a woman. The woman with her arm linked with Harry's is Mavis Stocks from Goldthorpe, one of her Scots family that has come to the Dern looking for work. Winnie knows her by sight. She is short and dark, like Winnie, and unmarried. Taken by a strong, calm self-possession, Winnie watches them sway along the pavement. Mavis laughs at a juggler joke and then reaches to kiss him and misses. More lipstick on his shirt. It seems worse than if she'd succeeded. She hears slurring, laughing, and then the slaps of their drunken feet on the pavement cease, and there is the sound of branches and grass. They've gone down to the railway embankment. Winnie stops and turns, walks back and follows on the path. They're down on the embankment, lying on the ground. Harry is on his back and Mavis is sprawled on top of him. Harry doesn't see Winnie until she's standing over them. Winnie summons the strength in her packed shoulders and short, thick forearms. Saying nothing, she reaches down to Mavis's coat, takes hold of it with both hands, lifts her off Harry and chucks her, headlong, into some long grass. "Right, lady," she says. "Get off my husband and stay off him. Don't ever come near him or me or any of my family again. If you do, you won't know what's bloody well at you." "Go in," says Harry. "It would just..." "Shut it, Harry. You," she says, turning back to the woman, "keep out of my sight, or I'll let everybody know what you are." And then she bends down, looks intently at Mavis, and slaps her hard across the face.
Richard Stacey was reading from The Valley by Richard Benson. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Thursday, the 1st of May. There are warnings of gales in Hebrides and Bailey. The general synopsis at 1800, low just west of Rockall, 1002, expected northeast France, 1010 by 1800 Thursday. High just north of Iceland, 1030, expected southeast Iceland, 1029 by the same time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking north at Zira, northerly 5 to 7, showers good. South at Zira, northerly veering southeasterly for a time, 4 or 5, occasionally 6, fair, good. Forties Cromarty, northeast 5 or 6, showers good. Fourth Tyne Dogger, east or northeast 5 or 6, rain then fair, moderate.